We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. Teens in the elementaries having their Zoom chats as well. On Christmas Eve, I think what we're going to do is going to be fun. It's different from soup and bread, to be sure, but I'm liking what you've been sending me about finding hope in the darkness. So before you sit down for dinner, join in, 5 o'clock. I'm imagining 45 minutes or so. It won't be long. It'll be a chance to be together, sing songs of hope, or actually hear songs of hope, and hear from one another. That'll be 5 p.m. Christmas Eve. Twice a year, fall and then winter, spring, our calendar focuses on groups and events that help us work the circle together. The schedule is up. It's on our website right now. But it's there now to give you time in advance to think about your life. What spiritual practices would strengthen you, your soul right now? The communal, the contemplative, the learning, the serving. And what does our community need? Because you're as important to others working their circle, finding the inner light in them as they are for you. Well, here are a couple of things that you could join in January. On January 6th, that's a Wednesday, the stories we tell ourselves about money, they're about as deep as our stories go. Well, this group will learn a practical tool. You'll need a budget, YNAB. It's a book. It's also a phone app. But it's also a great way to get to know some folks during a pandemic. It's a chance to talk about real stuff. As always, you get to decide how and how much you want to, or what and how much you want to say, but you also get to think out loud. Why do I do the things that I do? It's a great self-awareness group. I hope you'll join in with Scott and Drew. That's going to happen on January 6th. And then on the 9th, the Saturday after that, we'll gather again to learn to do the self-awareness practice, the thing that we call doing a worksheet. Why do I do the things that I do? The emotions that I feel and the avoidance strategies that I employ. What are the underlying stories and the unseen instincts that are functioning all the time? When we see what's in there, that's the first step to inner transformation. So I hope you'll join in on the Zoom. Again, it'll be Saturday morning, January 9th at 9 a.m. After a short explanation, we'll do a live demonstration of the worksheet, and you'll walk away with a really clear understanding of the process. And you'll be invited to join in some practice times to learn by doing, again, Saturday morning, January 9th. So, this last Sunday of Advent, we finish exploring how we find hope in our dark times. It's been a practical lesson, breaking down an ancient annual rhythm to practicalities, how-tos. Tending and befriending, we saw that one. Also, gratitude. We pause, we look up from our current dark moment to see a bigger picture. Because, evolution brain, we tend to zero in on the ugly, the painful, the awful, and that easily fills up the whole horizon of our awareness, and it pushes out other things, things that are also true, and the pushed out things, well, it turns out that they are often where hope comes from. And when we push them out, sapped strength, lost resilience, diminished capacity to step back when we take a hit, which then further eclipses hope. It's a whole cycle. But the good news is, by switching things up, we can adapt that cycle and get it working for us, building hope within us. Well, last week we looked at one of the ways we elevate our vision, and that is we look back. We remember past obstacles that we overcame. Ugly times that we navigated, or ugly times that our forebears navigated, we remember. Oh yeah, there is more to the story than the darkness. I got to remember that. Dark times come, they do, but they also go. Sorrows do last for the night, but joy does come in the morning. By shifting our focus and giving some of our focus, not just to the darkness, but also to the bigger picture, the picture that includes the light, we cultivate hope. Well, today we're going to come back to that, elevating our vision. But this time, instead of looking back, we'll talk about looking into the future. Let me tell you what I mean by that by telling you a story. Some of you have met Sarah Joy in an online kind of way. She lives in the UK and is about as connected to our community as you can be across 5 time zones. Well, she was in our Examine Through the Holidays Facebook group this year, and she was in the same weekly check-in Zoom that I was in. And on those Zooms, we ask each other how our practice is going, and we check in with each other to see how our lives are going as we are doing the practice. It's been really good. And after one of those check-in Zooms, I asked Sarah Joy if I could tell her story. So here's the story. She's in a new relationship, and she's thinking about the future of the relationship, but also she's thinking about who she is in it. Now, maybe because we've been doing this contemplative self-awareness practice together, she's a bit more focused on observing and watching and seeing herself, her thoughts, and her feelings. And sure enough, she saw herself in this relationship not doing a thing that she just about always does. Now, we talk a lot about habit thoughts and habit emotional routines. Well, like all of us, Sarah Joy has them. But she wasn't running one that she almost always runs. It's one of those routines, and hers is to externalize her focus to other people. She said, "I'm always pinging like a submarine. I ping out, and then I see what comes back, and then I adapt myself in response to whatever it was that came back. What's needed here? Okay, I bet I could provide that. What does the situation call for? Well, I bet that would be helpful if I did that. I can do that. What would make things go better in this context with this person? Okay, I think I could do that too." Now, that's a pretty endearing trait. So you can see how the rest of us would keep reinforcing that habit for Sarah Joy. Who doesn't like to be around somebody who's that accommodating? Who doesn't like to be around somebody that cooperative, that helpful? So we feed back to Sarah Joy, "Oh, you're good. Oh, you're considerate, you're hospitable, you're so agreeable, you're so amenable, we like you." So yeah, that'll reinforce a habit routine. But like all of our shadow sides, there's always a flip side to our gifts. Every gift comes with a curse. Do X and it is good. Do a little bit more of X, it's still good. But somewhere along the line, we keep doing X and it stops being a gift. And it actually becomes a self. It becomes all we ever do. It is just our way. And gifts, natural personality strength, they're just not big enough to contain this vast mystery of human being. So eventually, all shadow traits break down. The very thing that was so good eventually starts to get toxic, begins to poison us. Well, people-pleasing, that's the term we use to talk about Sarah Joy's curse side of her gift. A lot of us are familiar with that. If we're not, we know people who are. But in this story, and in this relationship, in this time, she found herself not doing that thing that she does. She wasn't pinging and then adapting. She wasn't externalizing her focus and then configuring herself to match. She wasn't doing what she normally does. So, good for her, right? Well, kind of. Not doing what she always does, well, that comes with challenges of its own, and not small ones. You might have seen her post in our community Facebook group. She used the term, "no fixed identity." When I don't do that thing, I don't really know what to do. I don't really know how to be. If I'm not configuring myself to other people, I don't really know what I even think or what I even feel. I don't even know my own desires. That's what she meant by no fixed identity. I'm so habituated to probing and then configuring. How do I even access what I truly want? Who I even am, what I deeply desire. I don't even know. Now, today's lesson is about finding hope by looking into the future. So why Sarah Joy's story? Well, here's why. It would be easy to conclude hearing her story, "Aw, that's a bad story. Too bad, Sarah Joy. Ah, no fixed identity? That can't be good. Can't access your your deep desires, your authentic self. Oh, too bad. That's got to be hard. Nobody wants that, right? But when she told the story to the examined group, you could tell this was not a bad story. It was really good, a really good story. Because it was a story about being on the cusp of a new way of approaching life. It was a story about moving into a new world, not there yet, but being able to see a world in which she could walk into situation and engage differently. What if I listened carefully to who they are, what they want, what they need, because I always do that anyway. But, and here's the crazy idea, what if I also listened carefully for who I am and what I want? What if I gave my gift, but I wasn't limited by it? What if I wasn't compelled to give it, compulsed even? What if instead of always waiting for someone else to create the context, someone else to set the scene, and then making sure I fit into it, what if I participated in setting the scene and creating the context? Now here's why it's such a good story. When we start to imagine a future that we had not imagined, hope. When we see some thing under the thing, and when we see how it has been dominating us, we can begin to elevate our vision into the future. We can see, I could live differently. Something that has long dominated how I approach my world, sight unseen, well, now we begin to have options. Options that we hadn't had. Now, it's still not easy to change habits, fits and starts. Yeah, that's how habit changing goes. But we don't even start the process until we see, until we reimagine our worlds and our lives. Well, look at that. Look at what is possible now. There's a recurring debate, especially when couples are having relational trouble. Can people change? Really? Can people really change? Nah, people never really change. Well, yeah, I think they can change. Nah, yeah, back and forth it goes. But here's the thing. In the context of spiritual community, it's not a debate. People change. They do. It happens all the time. As intractable as stuck points get, and they get intractable, people change. People grow. People transform. In the religious tradition, we use the term conversion. We convert from one way of living our lives to an elevated way, and it happens all the time. Now, there's a definite process involved in it happening. It doesn't happen willy-nilly. It's easy to not engage that process and then consequently to get discouraged and default to believing, well, no, I guess deep change doesn't really happen. But that's just because we aren't engaging the change process. And by the way, we're going to be exploring a lot of the details of the change process in the new year. I've got an advantage because of my role here in our spiritual community. I get to see lots of people who do engage the process. Consequently, I've seen lots of intractable stuck points get stripped down, get reshaped, reconfigured, and rebuilt, and I see it again and again and again. So when I hear people say, people don't really change, I say hogwash. People change. And that means families change. And that means homes and home life changes. And that means big relational troubles, they change. And when people change, businesses change. And schools change. And neighborhoods change. It happens all the time. And when we look back far enough, history changes. When people change, when lives change, history changes. We find hope in the darkness when we pause a moment, elevate our vision, look up from our current dark points, and when we see the bigger picture, the whole picture. And we do that, as we saw last time, by looking back, but also as Sarah Joy is doing these days, and as many of us do, when we get a glimpse of a bigger way of being and imagining a way forward. There are things that we can do to help jump us out of the ruts that get stuck in our heads. There are things that we can do that break up the habits and shine light on our blind spots and reroute our go-to routines. There are things that we can do. And one of them is to be in spiritual community. One of them is to have spiritual friends, to have spaces in our lives where we regularly talk about our souls, where we talk about our growing edges, where we talk about our stuck places, because it's just a truism that we find the inner divine better together. We discern the inner voice, we see the inner light better together. I don't think it's an accident that I heard Sarah Joy's story in a group that was focused on doing the examined practice together. I heard another really great story from Scott. I hope to tell you that one later. Robin too, Heather too, and I myself, I had my own story, because we are doing the practice and we're doing it together. We're in the kind of space where seeing just happens. We see what we hadn't been seeing because we're being encouraged by one another, knowing that we'll be talking it over with one another. When we do that, self-awareness just goes deeper. Now, I've been in a funk for several weeks now. Not the first time. I know how to do funk. But I was doing this spiritual practice, and I was doing it with these spiritual friends. And maybe another week I'll tell you my own story, but it wasn't dissimilar in pattern to Sarah Joy's. Well, look at that. By standing outside of my own habits and looking at them, what do you know? My funk is a habit. It's a thought habit and an emotional routine habit. And also, I've got a well-worn false self strategy to distract myself from my funks. Well, what if I didn't do that? Who might I be if I didn't do that? How might I live if I didn't? Now, that's happened for me. It's happened for several people in this group. And it's not because this group is filled with particularly special people, this examined group. I mean, we are special, but that's not why we're telling these stories. No, we're just doing the process that helps people see what they had not been seeing. It's an environment that we get into that helps us imagine a different future, a better way of being in our world, a better way of shaping our worlds. And that will give us hope when times are dark. The principle behind the ancient spiritual practices is really pretty simple. What our practices are just the experiences of generations that speak back to us and tell us what works and what doesn't. It's really just the voices of those gone before us encouraging us to not do the stuff that doesn't work and to do the stuff that does. How simple is that? And what history has stumbled onto is a set of stories and practices that will, when practiced consistently, open our eyes to see a better future. Stories and practices that will, when practiced over time, highlight blind spots and stuck points and hidden drivers and dictating thoughts and emotions and words and actions. And once we see those, we can begin to choose them, or more to the point, not choose them. Quite often, when we do the practices, it opens our eyes to resources that are there. They've always been there, we just didn't see them. People that we can talk to, wisdom that we can access, solutions we hadn't seen, possibilities we hadn't considered. Again, there, we just didn't see them. Alternatively, we could skip all of that and default back to the same old habits that we've got ingrained in our brains. Here's an all too familiar one. Here's one that doesn't work. Here's one that is not in our spiritual practice toolbox, even though it worms its way in all the time. It's the beat ourselves up fallacy. Here's how it goes. We do something that we don't want to do. Oh, we are so embarrassed. Oh, it hurt us and it hurt somebody that we love. We are so disappointed with ourselves. It was a bad thing. Now, for a lot of people, as soon as that happens, in comes the routine. It just kicks right in. It's cached away, always there at the ready, and here it goes. Come down hard. Yep, that is surely going to work because it was a bad thing, so I better come down hard on myself. So, since it was such a bad thing, we imagine that we need a commensurate response, so here we go. Are we ready? kick ourselves and kick ourselves hard and long and harsh with internal words and internal criticism. Say those things out loud. Say them often and get rough and get mean. Draw from all that strong emotion that surges up at times like this and use it to focus it on attack. We make it painful enough for ourselves. Well, that'll teach us. We'll think twice before we ever do that thing again, which would be worth all the pain if it actually changed future behavior over time. But it doesn't. Remember, spiritual stories and practices, they're just the accumulated wisdom about what works. And that one, it doesn't. In our Enneagram seminar and in our groups, Robin regularly talks about the importance of being gracious toward ourselves, merciful toward ourselves, kind and gentle to ourselves, which for many feels like a cop-out. No, because I've done a bad thing, crime and punishment. If I did the crime, well, then I gotta pay. But getting off scot-free, that's not what gentleness is about. That's not what mercy is about. No, there's a reason that mercy is in the spiritual toolbox and the beat-up fallacy is not. One works, the other doesn't. It takes a lot of energy to be that harsh on ourselves. And that's energy that we could spend doing things that will actually change things. The beat-up fallacy is a fallacy. And while we're doing it, what we're not doing is the practices. All we're doing is sucking up a whole bunch of system resource, pretty much assuring that we won't be doing the practices that would actually affect change in our lives. I said the last few weeks I've been asking people how they found hope in the darkness, and Laura Reardon wrote back when I asked, and she said, I've experienced the most spiritual and emotional growth in my dark times when I turn to the people that are close to me for support, when I give myself permission to invest in myself spiritually and emotionally, kind to myself, gentle to myself, patient with myself. And look at Laura, because that's ancient wisdom right there. And no surprise that it worked, because it's worked for so many generations before we ever showed up. That's what ancient wisdom does. It works. If we don't fall prey to the beat-up fallacy, but if instead we put that energy into one of the practices, if we work the circle, and if we do it in the context of together, yeah, it works. If we do it in the context of together, yeah, it works. And we change. And we begin getting glimpses of a future that we had not seen. We become able to elevate our vision from the dark places. And what do you know? Hope. It's there. And indwelling divine, may that be so for us. I pray that will be your experience as it has been mine. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your giving. And Scott has mentioned in the past that one of the things that we can do in our community is give stock at the end of the year. If that works out for you to be able to avoid a tax situation, we can do that. Just use the Contact Us button and Scott will get back to you on how to do that. Remember what I say all the time, that spiritual community is worth investing in. The return on investment is very good. What happens in our lives, in our souls, in our families is worth it. So, as you're doing that, Gene, what are folks thinking about? What's stirring up in people's hearts?
So, Cindy Appleby said, what a great story. Thanks for letting it be shared, Sarah Joy. She feels this deeply, and it's her dilemma as well.
I thank you again, Sarah Joy, for letting me tell that story, because Cindy's right. That's a lot of people's story.
So Ange Scioli says, in deconstructing my false self, I just feel so adrift sometimes. So it can feel like I'm going the wrong way. When we cheer for each other in that process, it's really affirming.
When we what? Cheer for each other?
Yep.
Well, that's good. I remember talking with a couple, must have been 20 years ago, and they were kind of locked in a really unhealthy dynamic. And we were talking a little bit about how you deconstruct the false self so that you can bring your best self to the relationship. And they had developed this pattern where his toxicity would actually, in a really sick and twisted way, feed her toxic needs, and her toxic needs would actually feed his toxic needs. And we, instead of talking about the relational dynamics, we started talking about the thing under that and how we get rid of these toxic needs. And at some point along the way, I think we were a couple months into talking together, he said, you know, at some point you got to start wondering, what's the whole point of marriage? Because if it's not for this toxic pattern that we've had, that we've so habituated, what is it for? And it's just as Angie says, it gets really disorienting when the false self pattern, that, oh my God, it is so sick and twisted, and oh, it is wearing us down, and over time we just can't sustain it, but it's what we know, and it's what we've got, and it's what we do. And we just, C.S. Lewis had a quote one time, he says, we forsake the idea of sandcastles at the seashore because all we can see are mud pies in the slums. When this is all we know, we can't imagine something else. And it is very disorienting when this starts to deconstruct, but this has not yet been reconstructed. So, yes, it is disorienting. And come on in. The water's fine.
So, Shelby Everhart says, just starting learning about the Enneagram mm-hmm. makes me think maybe both sides of do people change are right to some extent. I personally feel I've changed a lot, so I'm often on team people can change. But when I see the strengths and weaknesses of my number, I've always been a three, I'm just a much healthier version now.
Yeah. Well, that is change. I mean, that's exactly what I mean by change. I have been doing a lot of reflecting lately, and when I was living in my personality type self and my blind spots, it did not seem like I was doing as much damage to those that I loved as I was doing. And now I'm older, and now I'm looking back, and now I am thinking two things. Oh my God, how did my wife survive that? Oh my God, people that I knew before I met Denise, how did they survive that? Oh my God, I'm feeling a lot of the chagrin of awareness of what I wasn't and what I was. But then the other thing that's happening is just as, who was it that shared that?
That was Shelby Everhart.
Shelby. I'm looking forward to meeting you, Shelby. Was exactly what Shelby is saying, which is, but I am not that. But those are no longer the drivers. Those are no longer, I can tell you, I can go back and tell you why I was doing the things that I was doing. And I can tell you what happened, that I don't feel the need to do those things anymore. And the future is bright when we get a vision of hope. All right, let's see. We've got one time for one more, or how many more do you have there?
More than you can answer.
Okay, all right. Let's do one more because we got another song.
All right. Rebecca, Tara says, I was just thinking this. The roots of our personalities are always with us, but we can change how we live them out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I was saying. All right, musicians, come on up. Actually, we got time for one more while they're coming up. It'll take them a second to get set up.
Okay. Heather Lee Ludden says, but is the right question, what does religion bring to the table that psychology doesn't? Why did Sarah Joy come to this insight via examine instead of via therapy? Or is that the psychology finally brought the kind of healing to the world that helps us get to these insights because religion had brought the world to a point of making a way for psychology? She says, Enneagram 4 here.
Well, here's a phrase, and before I say the phrase, let me just say the word God is a very difficult word to pin down. You cannot pin down the word God. It is a code word for ultimacy, so we have no idea what we mean when we say the word God, but it does point us in a direction of experience, all right? That's the preamble. You ready? Here's the phrase. The phrase is, all truth is God's truth. We are not at odds with science. We are not at odds with psychology. We are not at odds with quantum physics. We are not at all odds with biology or evolutionary psychology. We're not at odds with any of that stuff. We are seekers of truth. And when we find the truth, we find the divine. So it's not either psychology for Sarah Joy or spirituality in the practice of examine. It is and. So Thank you, Heather, for pointing that out. And so Sky's going to close with this song about spreading kindness. Go tell it on the mountain. And she sent it to me. She said, this is about kindness and hope because lots of people are feeling the darkness. And we have hope. We can find it and we can share it. Listen as we go. And God bless you. Hand on heart, divine in us. Share it with someone nearby you. See you next week. Sky hit it. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.